Locked On NBA. The biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in Houston to speak with Ben Dubose of the Locked On Rockets podcast to preview the much-anticipated Golden State-Houston series and what Houston needs to do to win that series. We'll go to Atlanta to speak with Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks about the Hawks hiring a new coach, Philadelphia 76ers assistant Lloyd Pierce. And lastly, we'll go to Toronto, where we check in with Sean Woodley about the shocking, I guess it depends on your point of view, the shocking firing of Dwayne Casey as the head coach of the Toronto Raptors. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi guys, welcome back to Locked On NBA. I'm your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast and the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com. The playoffs are getting whittled down. We've got four teams left. We've got exciting conference finals series to talk about. We've got coaches getting hired and fired all over the place. Tons of stuff. The NBA never stops. It's a 12-month league. There's always something happening. We're going to be looking at a bunch of stuff in today's show. So let's get to it. I'll bring in the host of the Locked On Rockets podcast now, Ben Dubose, to speak about the number one seeded team in the entire NBA. Ben, the Rockets have lost two games through their first two series in the playoffs. They've got the best offense in the NBA, probably one of the best, or probably the best offense in NBA history, an extraordinarily underrated defense that people think is trash just because of false Mike D'Antoni past narratives, yet they're still being considerably, I don't know if underrated is the right word, maybe not really considered a threat here to take on the Warriors. Why is that, and why are people wrong?
It surprises me a lot, too. I mean, I guess a lot of it is deference to Golden State, which I understand that on paper, it's the most talented team in NBA history. I understand the narrative of it's a team that won 73 games, then added Kevin Durant, and has won the Western Conference the last 3 years. I understand the historical dominance. All of that is true. But at the same time, I do feel some of it's lazy because we have 92 games worth of data, Josh, 82 in the regular season, 10 in the playoffs, that shows the Rockets, at the least, are in the Warriors' class. Now, a lot of metrics will show you they've actually been a little bit better, which, of course, is evidenced by 65 wins versus 59 in the regular season. I'll accept that some of that was certainly injury-related, especially what happened to Stephen Curry late in the regular season, but at a bare minimum, I think the Rockets are in the right neighborhood. Could I see the Warriors winning the series? Yeah, absolutely. But it's one of those that, to me, the talk that we're seeing of the Warriors in five, which kind of seems to be the consensus media prediction, you'll never say never with the Warriors, but I don't see it. Because what it looks like to me are two teams that we have 92 games of data that profile very, very similarly.
Yeah, look, I don't see the Warriors in five either. I've seen that bandied about in plenty of different places. I've actually picked the Warriors in seven, but I could see it going either way very comfortably. The Rockets have been my pick for the title for the majority of the season. The Warriors are looking good now, but it's not like the Rockets have looked poor. We've had guys stepping up, big performances from Chris Paul. James Harden hasn't been at his best in the playoffs, and he can still go to another level. So how does this Rockets team, how do they beat this Warriors team? What can they do defensively? Because, again, the defense is a part of their game that has been extremely underrated by people. People don't realize just how good they are. They've brought in people over the offseason specifically to be able to handle the Kevin Durant threat. So who are those guys, and how are they going to be able to attack what the Warriors do offensively?
I think the big, big case for them, it all comes down to pace, and I think indirectly it comes down to Clint Capella. Pace is the big question because we know the Warriors, they're lethal in transition, especially now if they have Steph Curry back. They're the fastest-paced team in the playoffs. And since February 1st, the Rockets are about the slowest-paced team in the entire NBA. And perhaps some of that's by design, because I think they realize, you know, you've kind of got to zig when they zag. And if the Warriors are so fast-paced and they are so lethal in transition, maybe you need to do the opposite of that to make it a half-court game. where, of course, the Rockets benefit because Chris Paul and James Harden, they've got two of the best isolation players in NBA history. But the other area where it really benefits the Rockets if they slow the pace is that it gets them set. They're number two in the league in defense off of makes. They're very good when they're established. Where they get occasionally leaky is in transition. So if you slow the pace offensively, it also helps you by extension defensively as well. So going into the series, you know the Warriors want to speed it up. You know the Rockets want to slow it down. Now, how do you win that matchup when both teams are trying to do that? To me, the big key is Capella. He's been tested the playoffs so far physically in terms of Karl-Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert, and he's held up extremely well. What the Warriors are going to do is challenge him mentally. That Hampton Fives lineup with the big four plus Andre Iguodala, it's not just about, you know, one-on-one who Capella picks up, because we know physically, even the Donovan Mitchells of the world, Capella can guard those. He's done phenomenally well. The way the Warriors challenge you is mentally, because they make you make so many quick decisions defensively. The ball movement is so sharp, and that, to me, is going to be the key to whether Capella can stay on the floor. If Capella can stay on the floor, both ends of the court, offensive rebounding, he's a big presence there and get you some easier buckets, much the same way that Tristan Thompson did back in 2016. I think that's kind of a roadmap to follow. And then indirectly, it helps your defense as well, because while you're slowing the pace by getting multiple possessions offensively and making it more of a slugfest. So to me, the big question is going to be if Capella can play. We'll learn early on. If Capella can play, there's so many trickle-down effects. You could also point out, by the way, that if Capella is able to play at the five, then it makes it all the more easier for you to fill out your other minutes, as opposed to if the Rockets have to stretch P.J. Tucker to play a ton of those tuck wagon lineups, then indirectly, besides losing the rebounding Capella, it also costs you downstream, because who are you going to play to fill out those, you know, those forward spot minutes? You might even have to play a Gerald Green or Ryan Anderson more, and that's a problem because of their defensive deficiencies. So to me, it comes down to pace, and in terms of winning pace, I think it comes down to Clint Capella. We know what he can do physically. Is he mentally sharp enough is the question to keep up with the Hampton Fives? I think he is. I've seen a lot of growth, but ultimately that's going to be the big test, and I think we'll find out pretty early these first two games in Houston.
Capella, I think it's fair to say, has been a breakout star in these playoffs with the way that he's played, the way that he's dominated matchups against Rudy Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns so far. We saw in the last series, though, against Utah, that Ryan Anderson was out of the rotation completely and Nene was getting those backup minutes, but I've got the feeling that we're going to see it switch the other way. Nene barely played against Golden State during the regular season. I think he only played one of the four matchups, and some of that's, you know, resting-wise, but some of it's also matchup stuff, because a general rule against the Warriors is, you know, centers really struggle. Now, Capella's one of those guys who can be an anomaly to that because of his ability, as you said, to switch onto perimeter guys and actually be competitive out there, but Nene can't do that. So we're going to see a little bit more Ryan Anderson, it appears, even though he is, you know, atrocious defensively, but he can at least provide something offensively that Nene can't. So I think that that's a switch that Houston will go for. Is that something that Mike D'Antoni has indicated, or is that just something that we can predict from past matchups?
A little bit of both. We have asked him, those of us in the Houston media, the last couple of days about Ryan Anderson, and he's made the point, Mike, both times, that just because he hasn't played in recent games, it doesn't mean he's not going to play. So he kind of has hinted at that. But ultimately, the thing with Ryan, a lot of it is injury-related, because, you know, like most shooters, there's a bit of rhythm that goes with it, and he did not play much at all after the All-Star break. First had a hip flexor, then a sprained ankle, and it's just tough to adjust on the fly in the playoffs. Now, they have had 5 days off between series. Maybe that helps him in terms of getting more practice reps. We'll have to see. So I think they will try Anderson before Nene, but ultimately I think it'll be kind of a short leash. And if it doesn't work out, then I think we'll see those tuck wagon lineups. They used a lot in the regular season with P.J. Tucker at the five, especially against the Warriors. They didn't do it a lot in the first two rounds of the playoffs. They did do it, though, a couple of small segments of Game 5 against Utah, the closeout game. They actually, into the first half, they had an 11-3 run to take an 8-point lead at the half with all with Tucker at the five. So I think that's one of the things you'll see, they'll try, especially in the first half, to buy a few minutes with Ryan Anderson. But bigger picture, I think it's more reasonable that, Capella's your center, and then P.J. Tucker is essentially your backup center. And then, of course, it means you got to fill out the forward minutes, and it means hopefully Luke Bamute and his shoulder hold up. But I think it goes without saying that Luke Bamute, with his versatility, they're going to be asking him to have an awful big load in this series regardless.
Yeah, absolutely. Mute had a little bit of a shoulder scare at one point in that Utah series and grimaced as he got bumped there, but hopefully he is okay. This is a series, Ben, that everyone has been anticipating all season. It's probably one of the most anticipated playoff series we've had in at least the last 5 years, I would say. I can't wait to watch it. We're all going to be tuned into Locked On Rockets and, of course, Locked On Warriors for the opposite side of the coin to hear how everything breaks down in this much anticipated series. Ben, thanks for coming on to Locked On NBA to give the Houston side of why they have a chance to advance to the NBA Finals.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Now it's time to head to Atlanta to speak with the host of the Locked On Hawks podcast, Brad Rowland. The Hawks have hired a new coach after firing Mike Budenholzer a few weeks back. And that new coach is former Philadelphia 76ers assistant head coach Lloyd Pierce. Brad, Lloyd Pierce comes in with a great reputation as assistant coach. What does the general NBA public need to know about Lloyd now that he has got his first NBA head coaching gig?
Yeah, as you mentioned, a really good reputation of all things that I've heard. You know, frankly, I've never been around him, so it's all secondhand stuff. But people that, you know, I think you and I would both trust around the league that have covered him and talked to him a lot, and a very, very strong player development background. You've seen a lot of high-profile players, Dwayne Wade, even LeBron James, Robert Covington, have referenced Pierce in the last couple of days, talking, just basically congratulating him and reaching out publicly to sort of just, you know, send some positivity his way. So a very good sort of reputation for player development, player relationships, all that fun stuff, and also the fact that he was credited a lot with what he did in Philadelphia to overhaul their defense. So the Sixers were a top five defensive team in the league this year. You know, some of that's obviously talent with having Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and those guys, but Pierce has really been lauded with the way that he was able to sort of, at least alongside Brett Brown, sort of cultivate that defense there. So, you know, very young guy, just turned 42 years old. It's one of those things where the Hawks are certainly in a rebuilding phase, but they're very excited about him locally. They'll be introducing him on Monday, and just very, very positive vibes right now.
Yeah, look, that's the vibe that I'm getting about him as well, is the player development stuff, his ability to relate and to get all the young guys to buy in and develop those guys. And that's going to be key for this Hawks team, who, of course, is dealing with a roster that's extraordinarily young, where you've got, you know, Taurean Prince and DeAndre Bembry and Dennis Schroeder, and obviously a high draft pick coming this year, and John Collins, and all these young guys trying to mold them together into a cohesive unit. That's where that sort of experience is going to come in handy, dealing with those young guys in Philadelphia. That's a huge, huge part of it. In terms of coaching style, do we have any indication of what he, like you talked about his defensive stuff, but what he likes to do offensively, or is it more, you know, coming from what, yeah, Brett Brown was doing? Like, is that sort of there, or do we have any idea of if he's bringing anything new to the table in that regard?
I'm sure he will. It's very early at this point in time. He's not had his introductory press conference yet in Atlanta. I think he's going to be asked about that, and will hopefully shed a little bit more light on his offensive side, on the offensive side of the ball, because, you know, no matter who you talk to about Pierce, it was pretty clear that his role was at least defense focused in Philadelphia. But, you know, going back before that, he was a assistant coach in a couple of other places, and was certainly someone who was able to do multiple things. So I think we'll probably have some more clarity on his offensive stuff when he's introduced. But for now, I mean, I'm assuming it might at least mirror something that Philadelphia has done, considering he was a high-profile assistant in Philadelphia. But I don't want to assume too much, because he may come in and overhaul. And listen, the Hawks have some talent, but it's not like this roster is necessarily set either. So he'll have sort of a blank canvas he can work with and maybe implement everything that he actually wants to do, which is actually probably a fun task for a head coach.
In terms of what Lloyd has done as a player, what can you illuminate people with in terms of his playing career? How much NBA experience did he have? What sort of stuff has he done before he's moved into coaching?
I think at this point, he's probably most famous from a playing standpoint for playing college basketball alongside Steve Nash at Santa Clara for 4 years. Pierce was a professional player, but not an NBA player. Played, I think it was 5 seasons overseas before coming back and starting his coaching career. Definitely a high-level college player, but somebody that I candidly did not know as a player. I was pretty young when he was in college, so it's one of those things like that. But certainly an established, you know, professional level player that has now sort of done the grind through the coaching ranks, starting out as a low level guy, a grad assistant basically at Santa Clara, moving on to the NBA ranks, bouncing around. You know, he's worked for four different organizations in the NBA, and obviously had a lot of positive reviews in all four stops. So just sort of a grinder in that way, even though, and you know, at 42 years old, he's very, very young to be getting a head coaching job full time in the NBA. But when you look back and just see all the experience that he has, it also makes a lot of sense. So not too much of a playing career to talk about, but he certainly played the game at a high level and would bring all of that to the table.
I legitimately don't care if someone has no NBA here playing experience when they've been named a coach. That I'm glad that he's got that job. You see a lot of people going on about it. Oh, but he hasn't played in the league. How's he going to be able to coach? To me, that's just, it's a massive, massive pile of garbage. And I'm glad that we're you know, not seeing people necessarily get swayed by that. And having a guy who's had all this coaching experience rather than getting someone who's either fresh out of playing or has just been announcing games. Shout out to Mark Jackson to get one of those jobs. It's much better someone like this. You feel more confident in it as a supporter of a team to have a guy like this who's got this experience grounded in coaching. Now, I'm going to say this partially tongue-in-cheek, but I think there might be a skerrick of truth to it. The fact that Lloyd Pierce now enters the NBA head coaching rank as, in my opinion, the undoubted most attractive head coach in the NBA, does that do something to a team who has, very small amounts of marketable stars in that market where Pierce can come in and really become a face of the franchise and someone that they can use for that sort of part? Or am I reading too much into that?
I mean, it's possible. I do think a lot's going to bank on how he deals with the media because, you know, previously for Mike Budenholzer, all his strengths, the media was not necessarily one of them. He did not necessarily like to do all of the media stuff. He would do it. He was a nice enough guy. Met him, you know, talked to him several times on and off the record, and Budenholzer was okay in that setting, but he was never a terribly engaging public speaker or really that was somebody that was going to bring a lot of excitement to the table. Pierce, you know, being as young as he is and being a guy who everybody seems to like and be sort of as an attractive candidate, I think it's at least possible that you could see him, especially right now, because, you know, aside from John Collins, they don't really have a ton of marketable talent on the player side. So if he comes in and he's really engaging with the media right away, that could certainly help. You know, it certainly doesn't hurt to have a young sort of potentially star level head coach if everything works right to sort of build your program around, because in the world of Brad Stevens, you kind of have seen the coach star come to the front a little bit more, at least in recent days. So I think you will see a lot of Pierce early on, and hopefully if it works out, you'll probably see a lot more of him in Atlanta and basically around the league.
I think it's good bringing in a younger coach with a younger group of players as well, and they can grow together, and he can if he is that, you know, personable, magnetic sort of personality guy, he can take some of the pressure off the developing players, whether they get pick one or pick two or pick three in this draft as well. He can also help to be that guy who leads them as a fresh face rather than a grizzled old coach who people have known about and know are going to treat these guys in a certain way. I think there's a real positive in that, in getting someone in who can grow with the players and develop them. Very similar to how Brett Brown worked in Philadelphia. You know, Brown came in as an assistant. They gave him the growing pains with the young team, and he was able to work through it. And I think a similar thing could be happening here with Pierce. Of course, more is going to be revealed in that introductory press conference, Brad, and you'll have all those details on Locked On Hawks when that happens. Everyone can stay tuned there. But I guess a new era being turned over in Atlanta now, so it's exciting times as they try to build for the future.
Absolutely. It's definitely a very exciting time. And the Hawks went into this looking for a young coach to grow with their program. As you were just mentioning, they even said that on the record. Travis Schlenk, who made the hire, pointed that out. And I think they found their guy in Pierce. They clearly centered on him. It was sort of a not well-kept secret in the last few days before they actually hired him that he was going to be the guy. And you know, he has all that experience in different ways in the NBA, as well as with the process in Philly, because, you know, the Hawks aren't quite going as far as Philadelphia did, but having a guy who's been through this before and is still young and can relate to players and sort of grow with them is what they were wanting to do. And that's a pretty exciting time in Atlanta.
Brad, thanks for coming on Locked On NBA to speak about your and the Atlanta Hawks' new coach.
My pleasure as always, but happy to do it, and we'll talk soon.
It's time to talk Raptors now with the host of the Locked On Raptors podcast, Sean Woodley. Sean, we spoke not that long ago about the Raptors in the playoffs against the Cavs. That's obviously done, but what we're going to talk about today now is the fact that the Raptors, the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, winners of 59 games, are looking for a new head coach. Are you surprised?
It's hard to say. you know, going into this week, I was kind of on the fence as to whether or not I thought Dwayne Casey should be fired. I was going back and forth in my head. And ultimately, I'm not that surprised, really. I think the way the results have gone the last 2 years, you know, getting swept by the Cavs 2 years straight, and just considering how the roster is kind of locked in and it's hard to sort of move off of contracts because, you know, all things considered, this was not supposed to be a year in which the Raptors were looking at a potential rebuild. I think moving on from Dwayne Casey was pretty much the only move that the team could really go with to sort of sell to the franchise to come back next season with sort of a new collection, a new coach and the same collection of players. And, you know, I think that was really the only way you could sell it as a PR thing. I don't think you could have said, okay, just going to run it back entirely with the same coach, same players, and hope for the best, because I think we've seen over the last couple of seasons that this just isn't a formula that's going to work. I'm not sure a new coach is going to change that. I think LeBron is LeBron, and the Raptors roster is, you know, kind of limited in certain places that we might get to. But I think ultimately this move makes sense. And as much as Dwayne Casey was an excellent coach for the team, I think honestly the team got to a point where it didn't need what Dwayne Casey is good at anymore. Dwayne Casey is an excellent big picture coach. You know, he's forged a culture here that was never existent for the Raptors before he came along. He, you know, I don't think there's a coincidence the Raptors won so many regular season games with him. He drills in habits, he establishes roles, everything's comfortable and sort of routine in the regular season, and that leads to great success and sort of overachieving preseason expectations. And, you know, in the playoffs, his limited sort of tactical tendencies, you know, he's not the best, you know, he's not the quickest, you know, guy when it comes to response inside of games when, you know, a team does something and it takes some time to respond. It sometimes takes him a game or two to respond, and that can cost you games in the playoffs. And I think the Raptors are at a point right now where I think they think their culture is sustainable. And, you know, without him, I think they can continue what they've done culture-wise, but they need a more sort of proficient in-game tactician. So factoring all those things in, I think it makes sense. And, you know, ultimately, it's not the most surprising move in the world.
Do you think that there is the players' relationship with Casey? Are there players who are going to respond negatively to this? Are there players who are going to feel like maybe freed because they didn't necessarily get on with Casey? What's the general, I guess, opinion of the playing group in regard to having Casey there? Is it going to be a negative for them, or is it going to be a positive?
That's so hard to say, because the only guy that you really heard anything about, you know, relationship-wise between the coach and player was Kyle Lowry. And, you know, that was kind of noted over the course of their tenure together that they'd never really quite saw eye to eye. I mean, Kyle Lowry said that after Dwayne Casey was fired when he was asked about it, saying that he never saw eye to eye with him or didn't always see eye to eye with him. And I think, you know, Kyle, I'm fascinated to see how Kyle, more than anybody else, responds to a new coach, because as sort of difficult as their relationship was at times, Dwayne did get a lot out of him and eventually sort of did smooth over any sort of rough spots in their relationship and got the most you could probably get out of Kyle Lowry. And I'm curious to see what type of head coach comes in next, because I think there's a certain type of guy, you know, personality-wise, who might clash with Lowry and could create a problem. You know, Jerry Stackhouse, for example, is the G League coach for the Raptors. He's a potential name that I'm sure we'll get an interview. And I do wonder if a guy like him, who's more of a sort of combative personality, would, you know, gel with Kyle Lowry. And so that's an interesting one. And I think maybe moving on from Casey will sort of, you know, it could go either way with Lowry. It could be something that's positive for him. Maybe he feels a little bit more free. Maybe someone will challenge him a little bit more. Or maybe someone just comes in and they just butt heads and it doesn't work. That could also happen as well. I think 7 years into it, I wouldn't be surprised if everyone is just kind of okay with a new voice coming in. You know, even DeMar DeRozan has said that Dwayne Casey's like a dad to him, but, you know, I think DeMar, as great as he is and as good as a season that he had this season and as much growth as he showed, I think, you know, there's a tendency maybe for him to not quite be held to the same level of accountability as a lot of players on the team, particularly when it comes to his defense. And I wonder if a new coach will help sort of make him a bit more of an accountable defender. And you know, I don't think they make this decision without talking to all the players and, you know, seeing what they say and sort of taking every opinion into account. And I do wonder if just 7 years is a long time to have the same message, and maybe everyone was just in need of someone new to come in and sort of change the sort of chemistry of the room. So again, I don't think this is going to be sort of anything sort of cataclysmic. I think they liked Dwayne Casey a lot. I don't think there were any relationships in that room that were so, you know, strong that, you know, the locker room's at risk of sort of falling apart. As I said, I think the Raptors think their culture is at a point where it's kind of impervious to this kind of stuff and impervious to melting down without a coach. But time will tell, and I guess it's going to depend on what kind of coach they bring in.
You mentioned Jerry Stackhouse as well. Another name who I'm sure will be in consideration is current Raptors assistant Nick Nurse. We've heard reports of Mike Budenholzer being in contention for this job. Are there any other names out there that have been floated around who could be looking at this job? Obviously, it's one of the more lucrative jobs or more appealing jobs that are out on the market with the Raptors and the Bucks. Probably, you'd have to say the Raptors is probably the number one job, given that they are the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. So what other names are out there?
Yeah, it's tough. I think, honestly, the Raptors don't have to get too cute here. I think Nick Nurse is a very, it's kind of a perfect replacement. I think he's a lot more tactically sound than Dwayne Casey. At least his reputation suggests that. And to sort of maintain the foundation that Casey built and, sort of the coaching pipeline that the Raptors have built up over the last couple of seasons, I think that would make sense. You don't have to go outside the organization. And I think if you go outside, someone new might sort of lead to you losing a bunch of the assistants that you've built up. And I think if you want to sort of, model yourself after, say, the Spurs, then maybe you want to just stay in-house and sort of promote from within and sort of suggest that this is a path that future coaches can take to getting a head coaching job. So my pick would be Nurse. Budenholzer is interesting. It's funny because I think, people look at the way he went out and, his last two playoff losses with the Hawks, I believe, were sweeps at the hands of the Cavs, or he had at least two sweeps at the hands of the Cavs over his time with Atlanta. And, that to move on from Dwayne Casey to bring in Budenholzer, from a results perspective, and also I think from just sort of a stylistic perspective, it's kind of a lateral move. And like that sort of speaks to, I think, how good a coach Dwayne Casey was, that not everyone is going to be an improvement. And there's a big risk that you're getting someone who's worse than Dwayne Casey in the aggregate. And I wonder if Budenholzer might fall into that category. I think, all the Spurs assistants will be talked to, whether it's Hitori Messina or even Becky Hammon. Like, I'm not sure Becky Hammon, I haven't heard her name floated around the way we've heard it, like Mike Budenholzer or anything like that. But Masai Ujiri's always kind of preached the importance of, diverse hiring practices and things like that. I would not be shocked if Becky Hammon got an interview at least. But yeah, I think the answer is probably right in front of the Raptors. If they're going to blow it up and get rid of DeMar and Kyle and all those guys on the roster and sort of start young, I think Jerry Stackhouse makes sense. But to bring in a guy like Stackhouse, who's a bit of a combative personality, like I mentioned, to bring it into a 59-win team and sort of expect him to hit the ground running, I think that might be a lot. So I think Nick Nurse is probably the obvious answer, and it might be even too obvious for Raptors fans to feel comfortable with. But I don't think they have to get too cute with this.
Well, we're definitely going to be seeing how this is going to play out over the coming weeks. It's one of the more intriguing situations in the NBA, not only the firing, but now who is going to be the replacement. And Sean, you will have all that info on Locked On Raptors when that decision is announced. So make sure you're checking out Locked On Raptors with Sean during the rest of the playoffs and the offseason. Sean, thanks for coming back onto Locked On NBA to talk about the Dwayne Casey firing with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Anytime.
And there you have it. Another episode of Locked On NBA in the books. Make sure you are subscribing to this podcast. And if you are listening to it on Apple Podcasts, a 5-star rating and a review goes a long way to getting the show out to a lot more people. You can also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And of course, make sure you're checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, whether that be the NBA shows, the NFL shows, or of course, now we've got Major League Baseball. And you can find all of that at our internet hub, lockedonsports.com. All the podcasts and all the original written content is over at lockedonsports.com. And go follow our NBA handle on Twitter and Facebook at LockedOnNBAnet. You can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. Reminder, my name is Josh Lloyd, and I also host the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.